You stupid bitch. Yeah, you're a stupid bitch. You stupid bitch.
Welcome to this week's episode of Stupid Bitches Say What, the Aussie podcast about everything and nothing, but always with wine, and your hosts, Sean Hipkins, Scarlett Collett.
Come on down.
Da, 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 da.
Da, da, da.
You're up.
Oh, shit. Well, clearly somebody was unprepared. This week, sit back and relax as we go back in time and discuss those terrible royals.
Nasty
who let the
things.
Power get to their sick and twisted heads. Listen in as Sean covers Vlad the Impaler, lawful prince of Walshian, or more technically, the Vode of Walshia,
and you're welcome.
even more technically ruthless leader who inspired Bram Stoker's Dracula due to his cruel and horrific ways, whilst I cover the devilish ways of Countess Elizabeth Bathory, the Hungarian noblewoman who was considered a serial killer of her time, with crimes spanning the late 1500s and early 1600s, and also has Dracula reference nicknames. Whew, that was a mouthful.
That was a big one, wasn't it? That's what she said.
What are you drinking, Sean?
Well, because we're having a little midweek podcast this week, our commitments fly at us left, right, and centre these days, don't they not? I'm having a cheeky rosé.
Lovely.
This is one I've wanted to try for a while. Well, the brand anyway. But this bottle came compliments of one cement, the Rush, during the hot preview.
Oh,
and it's that Little Ripples. Have you heard about Little Ripples?
I think we were talking about it, but I can't recall.
Yeah. So they have one bottle, one person, 1 year. So by purchasing a bottle of Little Ripples, you are providing 1 year of clean water to one person in a developing community. So that's pretty good. I like that about it. I was worried it might have been an SJP special, but it's not. It's full alcohol. It's 12.5%, 7.4 standard drinks. Is that standard for a wine?
Yes, sure. Maybe. Maybe a little lighter than normal.
Maybe a little light, but definitely no SJP.
It depends on the grapes and the tannins and all the bits that go in.
This is true. And it's South Australian, so it's Aussie, which is nice.
Oh,
and it's
gosh.
A 2022 blend, if you will.
Baby 2022.
And let me supple on its delightful teat.
Oh, you've got your little tiny glass again that looks like it's, you know, made for children in your giant hands.
It's actually delicious.
Oh, hurrah.
That's nice. But yes, it does, because to me it looks like a standard wine glass, but then when I see it in the YouTube video, it's like a thimble. But it is midweek.
It looks like a thimble.
And
it
what
looks
are
like
you
you're playing dollhouse.
And what are you drinking, you stupid bitch?
Well, I just opened this. I haven't had a sip yet, and I had shivers when I smelt it.
Mm.
But it's not a cheapie, because I specifically gave instructions to my husband, because I didn't have time to go to the bottle shop and I drank all my naked wines.
Jesus.
In the space of 2 weeks.
Well done, Cal.
I said between $15 and $20 plus, and something that I have not drunk before, preferably, but please don't kill yourself trying to find something I haven't drunk before.
I was going to say, would he know? Would he just be going,
very hard to do. So it's Cam Sean. It's a Sauv Blanc. It's a 2020.
Oh, Francois. And it's got my name in it. I love that.
I think he might have gone outside of budget with this
one. Oh, strict talking to Tyler.
It's from New Zealand. And look, it's got a little bar on it.
Oh, bar ram you.
It's not Sean as in S-E-A-N. It's Sean
the sheep.
As in S-H-O-R-N.
Right. I get it.
So let's have a little tipple, shall we?
Please do. Kitty.
It's nice. It's got a little tiny fruity aftertaste. I do feel that.
So it is a Sean.
I do feel that I can now tell the difference between a New Zealand and an Australian wine.
I love that. That's good. See, educating ourselves with this podcast and wine.
No, I'm full of shit. Come on. You know that if you put two glasses in front of me with no labels on, there's no way I'd be able to tell you.
This one has aromas of lamb, rosemary. Very good. So, shall we get into how the week has been?
I'd love to.
Well, first of all, I do just want to say, just in case one of our new followers that we met recently is listening, hi, Beth, and thanks for following us. We may have forced you into it during the bottomless brunch that we'll get into, but either way.
You won't be sorry.
You will not be sorry. But yes, and then let's talk about the bottomless brunch, shall we?
Well, that was pretty much where I was going to go with how's my week been. So you all start, right, and I'll just chuck in bits and pieces as you go. I'll help fill out the story, shall I?
I was going to say, I'll open. You give the story and then I'll close it with a little bit of...
Excellent. Yes, yes. I was hoping we would get to that. I assumed that would be on the agenda for this evening because we can't go by without letting that one go, can we?
No, and I didn't even think about it until you said perfect for how's your week been. So I screenshotted that, put it in my files. So as dear listeners may know, we went to Summer House in the Valley for a bottomless brunch last year for our first year birthday celebrations. And we went again this time because such a great deal, $65 for the powwow, good food.
Food's fabulous too. So if you're listening and you're looking for a place to go and get really fucking hammered.
Saturdays and Sundays.
On a reasonable budget and get fed.
Summer House in the Valley. It's the old ex-cargo for those who live in Brisbane City. And we went there with a couple of friends this time to partake in the activities yet again. Take it away, Sky.
One of our favourite pastimes.
Especially on a Saturday.
Yeah, especially. So, look, you know, for $65, it's all you can drink cocktail jugs. They have four different kinds and they're all quite delightful, aren't they?
They are. They're reasonable.
Bubbles. And for those inclined, beers, but certainly we weren't drinking any beers. We were all about the bubbles and the cocktails, weren't we?
Well, I think whenever you go to a bottomless brunch, for me anyway, it's sort of rude not to have bubbles. It's kind of the thing, you know. It's like going to a breakfast brunch and not having a Bloody Mary.
And we were catching up with some friends that we hadn't seen in a little while as well. So it was, you know, cheers all round, drinks all round. You would think that, you know, 2 hours is quite a short stub of time, but we were fairly intoxicated.
It's amazing what you can do when you put your mind to it, I have to say. And we really put our fucking mind to it that day.
Yeah, we really committed, didn't we? We went all the way.
Even when the bubbles was getting hot on the table when we had the stash, we'll just pour them into a cool glass of cocktail mix and enjoy it that way. Punch, if you will.
So then our travels took us, you know, over to the old Valley Mall.
RG's?
The Empire.
Went to the Empire first, then we crossed the road into the RG's one, I thought.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
But again, it's all a bit blurry.
Yes, yes. Beano was, you know, he was struggling to find his way, weren't you, love?
I was. And not as struggling as my husband, though.
I feel like you should take it away from here.
Take it away. So I was in there playing the pokies. Vinny hit a wall. He's like, babe, I'm going. I don't even know if he told me he was going.
No. From my recollection, what happened was you got a phone call from him and he was already in the cab. He ghosted everybody.
He's done this before.
Complete backdoor. Didn't say a word to anyone. And the next thing you're shoving your phone in my face, FaceTiming him, and he's like, I'm sorry. I had to go.
This is when he was in the car. Cab, back of the cab, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then I got the phone call from him. I've gone. Hurry up and come home, basically. So I was like, all right, hang on. I'll get kebabs. I'll get chips. I'll bring Claire, our friend who was staying with us.
Meanwhile, we kicked on for another good couple of hours.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't get home till 7. Nice. Half past 7, I think.
Well, same. So Vinny left home at about, Vinny left the pub at about 4:45, I'd say.
Around about, yeah.
Then Claire and I went down to the kebab shop. I was speaking to him on the phone. He told me he wanted a doner kebab.
Insane kebabs, by the way. I reckon the kebab we had would have been one of the best of my lifetime. Like, it was
it to the left? Was it the big kebab shop?
The one almost directly across from Archie's.
Okay, well, I'll trial that next time because we went down a bit to the one I'd been to after the last time we went to Summer House and we came out the Prince Consort.
Well, we brought Link home a snack pack as well. We brought everything home and we ate it because we got straight into an Uber, so we ate it when we got home. And Link was just like,
just good.
Insane. He was like, this is mum. Where did you even get this from?
Great.
It's just insane. It was so good.
I'm looking forward to trying it. So, yeah, we went and got our kebabs and got chips. Then we got into a cab. We said goodbye to Beth. Beth was going to come back for a bit for a drink. And then Claire basically said to her, look, you know, where you're going, it's sort of in the opposite direction. Just go. We're probably just going to go inside anyway, eat and pass out. So good job that Beth did take Claire's advice.
Best laid plans.
So we came back. I had the kebabs. We didn't need any of them. Had them all ready. Got here, pushed the buzzer, no answer. Try to call Vinny, no answer. We get into the stairwell, come up, blind as fucking bats, banging on the door, Vinny! And I live in an apartment complex, so the hallway is like doors of apartments, banging on it, just thinking, fuck, people are going to hear. I can't get too aggressive. Like if I was at home at a house, I'd be on the back door, wake the fuck up!
At every single window. You can't even get to a window, can you? Because it's really just the balcony.
One way in and out from here, unless you jump.
Fuck, I love this story.
And then Claire was banging. She's like, Vinny, Vinny as well. Then she gave up. She sat on the floor, leant up against the wall and started eating her kebab. Neighbours came
out. As you do. Totally understandable under the circumstances.
Neighbours came out from across the hall as well. I was blind. The whole family came out. They were going somewhere and I'm like, my husband's locked us out. We're at the bottom of his brunch. Trust me, he hasn't locked us out because he's angry. He's just locked us out because he's passed out. Holy shit, I don't know what the fuck I was saying. Then realised when they left, okay, it's probably time to stop banging on the door. So went down to the Bodycorp manager, not the Bodycorp, the property manager, knocked on her door, no answer, walked, she opened the door. I was like, hi there, we'll call her Susan. Hi there, Susan. Can I please, my husband has passed out and drunk in our apartment and he's locked us out. Can you please let us in?
No, you actually said that my husband is drunk and passed out in our apartment.
And he's locked me out. Yeah, I should have said. And she was like, no, so what you can do is you can call these emergency people. I said, I'm not doing that. I said, don't worry about it. I've lived here for 7 years, Susan.
A $300 call out fee or some bullshit.
Exactly.
Like that, I'm sure.
So I was like, we're not doing that. What I should have said was, I'm really concerned because I was talking to him just beforehand. And I think I'm worried he's hit his head.
He was very upset when he left and he's just not answering my phone calls.
I'm worried he may have fallen and hit his head or something, Susan. Something. Anyway, Susan was no fucking help. So we then left, went back out the
front. What are you doing?
Sort your shit out, Susan. We went out the front of the apartment, started buzzing him again, saw more neighbours, not our direct neighbours, but people we see frequently that live in our building, come up. Claire's rolling around on the floor, patting one of their dogs, and I'm going up there trying to buzz in, going, hey, you know, this is what's happened. We go into their brunch and blah, 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 which Claire said I was pretty animated about. Anyway, we get to that point and I was like, fuck this, let's just go to the pub. So we went to a pub that's just down the road from us. I also started sending Vinny text messages. Babe, wake the fuck up. Where the fuck are you? What the fuck's going on? That's it. I'm taking money out of your account and I'm spending it on the pokies. So Claire and I went. She goes, can I have 50? So I gave her 50 bucks of Vinny's money. I took 100 and we bet it on the pokies.
It's better than 300 for the call-out fee.
Well, exactly. And so I played that in the pokies and then we were there for about 2 hours drinking more. Still had my kebab, Vinny's kebab and a hot chips. Even one of the chicks came through the pokies and staff that worked there and she's like, picked it up. She's like, oh. I was like, oh, that's mine. That's my kebab.
That's for later.
That's for later. I can't eat when I'm out. I can't sit in the hallway. I need to be at home, comfortable, eating.
I'm just same. I don't like that too.
Let me get all set up, get it all ready.
Yeah. And let me get comfy.
And we're good.
My comfy pants. Yeah.
What are we watching? Anyway, then about just after 7:30, Vinny calls me. He's like, babe, where are you? And I said, don't you fucking dare. I'd also sent him a text message before then saying, I don't think we can come back from this.
D-I-V-O-R-C-E.
That's what I was hinting at. Try to see if he was awake. Just put the fear of God to him when he does wake up and read the message. Then he called me. He's like, babe, where are you? I'm like, where the fuck are you? We've been trying to get into the apartment for the last 2 hours. So don't lie to me. I can hear pokies in the background. I was like, oh my God.
Well, that was accurate.
Yeah, it was true, but we were fucking waiting. So we marched back home, opened the door. I was like, apologize. You have to apologize. And he just kept making excuses. I'm like, no, apologize. I spoke to you 10 minutes before we came home and you'd got into bed. You literally didn't pass out on the couch. You got into bed, got under the covers, and put yourself to sleep.
Such a pretty thing to do.
Oh, God. But we got in. The plans of watching World Pride that night fell through, so that was a bummer. But World Pride was also another highlight of the week. Sydney, first time in the Southern Hemisphere that World Pride's been held.
Aww.
And it was in Sydney, and I missed it. That's the bottomless brunch and World Pride story. And needless to say, Vinny and I are back on talking terms. It was not the end of us. We could come back from it. All is well.
So, well, I was, towards the end, I wasn't drinking as much. So because we got home at a reasonable hour, we came back. I think, oh, that's right. We made the Uber go through stop at Liquorland so we could get 3 extra bottles of wine because we had huge plans for the night. Got in, poured a glass each, sipped it while we were watching a little bit of telly. He tried to make me watch another Brad Pitt movie, The Devil's Own. I've seen it before, couldn't get into it. It was too,
too
the
deep.
Kind of movie that you need to be focused on to really get into. And then he put himself to bed and I think I barely finished my wine. His full glass was still there.
And then
I woke up on Sunday morning and I felt fine. He was like a ratchet, like Tyler was a complete ratchet. And then I get this message from you.
You'll never guess what happened.
So I got locked out for 2.5 hours and I was crying laughing. I ran into Tyler. I was like, read this.
Oh, we were devastated.
Like, Tyler's like, fucking Vinny.
Yeah, fucking Vinny is right. We were devastated. I was so looking forward to getting in, as we said, setting up with the food, watching TV, probably doing some Eurovision. No. I think we came back. It was not to be. Speaking of television, do you want to chat about maths or?
Did you get up to date? Did you watch that episode?
So with maths, I'm basically nearly finished. I've gotten to the point where Evelyn's taken Dan off for a talk in the private, and I haven't seen that.
Yes, okay.
But I know about the butt tile.
You're pretty much at the end of it then. But what about how she throws Hugo under the bus?
Look, can I just say, so for the listeners at home that follow maths, we're up to the butt dial scandal. And can I just say that Rupert's girlfriend wife, what's her name?
Evelyn. That's Hugo's.
Ah, okay. So what were you going to say about Rupert, sorry?
Oh, no, I was saying about how Evelyn completely threw Hugo under the bus by saying, own it, man. And, like, I feel like in the whole situation, again, we apologise if you haven't seen it because there's too much history for us to bring you up to date if you don't watch maths. But I feel like in the whole situation, Hugo has been completely stitched up by the producers entirely, putting him with that girl.
100%.
And if I was in his shoes, I probably would have said some pretty ugly things about her anyway.
100%.
Dan, on the other hand,
is
a complete dirty dog who actually made me think he was a really, really nice guy the whole beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And the last couple of weeks, or the last couple of episodes, I'm like, ooh, he's on Harrison's level, really.
He's a nasty piece. Well, Harrison's his best friend.
Yes.
And Harrison's a fuckwit.
He's like the Texan from last year, you know, completely like undermining her. Who disappears for 6 to 8 hours a day
exercising
at the gym? That's a fucking lie if I've ever heard one.
I know. There's apparently photos came out from Maths Funny where they'd had photos of Dan at the time of recording. They're like, oh, we just remembered we had these photos of the days when he was away and he was actually with friends. And, you know, when he went to the day spa, he was obviously doing it with people. But back to Hugo, I agree. I think if I was Hugo, I would also call Taylor a see you next Tuesday.
She is 100%. And you know how much I hate this word, a see you next Tuesday.
And she turns around and was saying things to him like, you know, I may be blunt, but I've never called you names. I'm just like, are you for fucking real? Poor Hugo, he has had his ass served to him day after day from
us. So have you saw the bit then in the most recent episode where he's literally just in absolutely gobsmacked? Because also sometimes when you get drunk, you say things very enthusiastic, like very 100%. Emphatically, like,
we're not going to come back from this.
Like, yeah. And, you know, it's just in the moment or, you know, especially when you're with friends, like you exaggerate things and, you know, you blow up and it's nice. And that's what he said. He's like, you know, I've experienced all this shit with her and I thought I was in a safe space where I could actually vent about her because she's been so horrible. And then it gets fucking recorded or butt dialed or, like, you know, Evelyn heard it all. And I thought, as much as I actually think Evelyn's quite cool and
I love her.
Completely holds her. Isn't she great?
She's amazing.
But I thought it was a little bit unfair, but I guess she doesn't know the background between Hugo and Taylor because she hasn't seen any of the stuff that we've seen either, and they've only, what, probably interacted at
and two, no one three has. Times. Yeah, she's just heard him saying nasty things.
And she just put him in Dan's category, whereas, and then so he goes out to the producers and he's just like spinning. He's like walking around like in complete like.
Oh, wasn't it when they were questioning him, his cheeks already had this huge rash around his neck.
My heart was really hurting for him. I thought, you know what, you've been completely stitched up, mate, from the get-go. Like, obviously they put her on the show because she's so fucking nuts and they love that shit. But this is part of the thing, you know, it's such bullshit that they're about finding love, yet they bring these absolute whack jobs into it.
For drama.
That she's horrible, a horrible person, I think.
She is absolutely horrible. And I hope to God at the commitment ceremony, he speaks up on the couch and he actually sheds light on the shit and the behaviour she's presented.
Because you haven't finished the episode, you don't see the couch. So they show you a flash forward of what happens on the couch and they actually nail her to the wall.
Oh, good.
Yeah, good. So they're like, as you know, they grill him a little bit. But and like, obviously, I haven't seen it because it's just come out tonight. Well, actually, it might not
be this week now. No, it comes on Sunday. Yeah.
They pretty much say the language that she uses towards him is so awful.
So he must say, speak up. Good.
Well, because even like when they're at the dinner party, like I know she was hurt.
She speaks to him like shit, yeah.
The things she says to him, and I can't believe he's still there. Like I would have walked ages ago if that was me. Like I would have been like, I'm fucking out. Like you can't speak. You can't treat me like that. Like
Yeah. It's like Sandy. It's all self-esteem based, isn't it? Where like you want the person to like you and then they don't. You want to know why and you care about that. You want them to like you when you should just be going, I actually don't need you to like me. You can go fuck.
And do you know when we really loved Sandy was when she was sticking up for Claire at the last commitment ceremony and she turned around and she said, she's owned up to it. She's apologized. She's apologized to everyone else. She's actually completely saying how awful it was and you know, is showing absolute remorse every step of the way. What else more can she do, Alyssa?
And Alyssa's and like, how much of a fucking hypocrite is Alyssa? Claire kissed a fake husband and owned it. Alyssa fucking slept with someone else's actual husband.
For 6 months, yes.
For 6 months. And I get it. Like, there's no shade to Alyssa about her past and all that shit. But how dare you then fucking have such a fucking opinion?
Yeah, people make mistakes. Like, don't get me wrong. No one condones cheating, but it does happen. Like, relationships, you know, things happen. Like, you can't hold that against yourself. It's not like you murdered someone.
Yeah, and you're not the only one who's allowed to get a reprieve from it, Alyssa.
Yeah, it was really brutal. And the other thing about Claire is that Jesse was actually really, really awful to her in the beginning. So horrendous. At that time when she did kiss old mate, he was a complete fucking jerk to her. He's done a full, you know,
turnaround.
But if I was Claire, I probably would have done the same thing, and I probably wouldn't have been apologetic about it. I probably would have been, you know what? But I think because their relationship has grown a little bit.
A lot since the kiss, yeah.
Yeah, then that's why, because they started to, you know, get along and stuff. But I still ultimately think Claire's awesome. I think she's stunningly attractive.
Yeah.
And she's also a young girl, you know, reeling off like the hits to her self-esteem from some of the things that Jesse would have. She needed
to pump it up.
Yeah, she would have been, and they were drunk and she was like, oh, yeah, I'll have a little kiss, whatever. But, like, don't throw her under the bus, man. Yeah. Like, come on.
And you can tell she felt gross about kissing that douche anyway. Anyone would. You'd be like, what a douche. What did I do?
What a douche.
But Jesse's kind of turned around in my books as well. It was so cute when he put the crystal under his bed.
What about his face during the whole when they're on the couch at the dinner party and Evelyn's just shot Sophia and he's like,
it was the epitome.
I was like,
ooh,
and he goes, I feel sick. I think I'm going to be sick. This is Milan. I think I'm going to be sick. And I'm like, I would feel the same if that was happening in front of me. I would feel like I was going to be sick.
I'd be like this, baby. Get me a wine, quick. I need to.
So the other thing I wanted to say is that we have, so Tyler's been completely against watching Mass from the very beginning. When I watch it, absolutely hates it. We back-to-back watched 3 episodes last night until like 11:45 because the drama that kept unfolding, we were both just like, play the next one.
He's exactly like Vinny. Vinny's like, oh, this shit. But then sits down and watches it. And it's like, what a fucking bitch that one is. I hate that asshole.
And I was like clapping the whole time. Give me more. I reckon, because to be fair, I only started watching it last season. And my sister has been telling me for years to watch it. But I feel like it's a show that you can't fully enjoy unless you've got someone sitting next to you to participate in the, like, are you serious stuff. Like, it's not something you can watch on your own.
Do you have maths friends at work that you talk to it about?
Oh, as soon as I get into work, everyone's like, are you up to date yet? Are you up to date? And I'm always like, I'm not up to date. You can only talk to me about up to this episode. Anything after that, I don't want to hear it.
Spoiler alert.
But, yeah, now I'm up to date. I was like,
very good.
I'm right there.
But anyway, should we get into our murderous royals?
Yes, please. So who's going first? I can't remember who went first last time.
I never can, though. I think you went first with Marilyn, did you? Yes, and I finished with Rock.
So then it's you.
It's moi. So the murderous royal I'm going to cover is Vlad the Impaler. And by impaler, I do not mean he had a massive cock.
And he, I wasn't even thinking of, like, fence palings. Like,
one of the most notorious figures in history, please. Vlad III, also known as Vlad Dracula, was the 15th century prince of Wallachia. I purposely didn't put in how to pronounce it in your intro thing because I just wanted to see what you'd do. Wallachia, I think, is how it's pronounced anyway. I Googled that shit. A region in modern-day Romania. He was born in 1431 in Transylvania, which was then part of the Kingdom of Hungary. He was infamous for his cruelty and ruthlessness in dealing with his enemies. And
Can I just say one thing? I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but let me just for the record say once again, we have not conferred on our subjects or the likeness of each other's topics. I just want to set the record straight right there.
Oh, okay, great. I look forward to hearing about the Countess. He was infamous for his cruelty and ruthlessness in dealing with his enemies, and his reputation as a bloodthirsty ruler is well known.
What year again? Tell me the years.
So he was born in 1431. There are many stories and legends about him, and some of the most gruesome ones involve his use of impalement as a form of punishment. But he's also said to have inspired the character of Dracula in Bram Stoker's famous novel, which makes sense, Transylvania. The origin of Vlad's nickname Dracula, however, come from his father, Vlad II's membership in the Order of the Dragon, which was a chivalric order found
chivalric.
Yeah. Regal. order found by the King of Hungary that was dedicated to defending Christianity against the Ottoman Turks Empire. Dracula is the Roman word for dragon, and Vlad II was known as Vlad Dracul, which means Vlad the Dragon. When Vlad III was just 11 years old, his father was assassinated by rival nobles who were unhappy with his rule. Vlad and his younger brother, Radu, were taken captive by the Ottoman Turks and held as hostages and imprisoned for several years. During his imprisonment, he was subjected to a series of tortures and humiliations, which you could imagine back then would have been fucking yucky, yucky stuff. Right. But he eventually, and I'm sure it's yucky stuff today, getting tortured and humiliations, but you
but
know,
they knew how to do it in those
barbaric
days.
Yeah.
They didn't let up. They kept him alive just to prolong it as long as possible. And it was like part of, you know, your crime for punishment and shit as well.
Death by agony. But he was eventually released and able to return to Wulakea. This experience had a profound impact on Vlad, and it's said to have fueled his hatred of the Turks. His reputation as a bloodthirsty ruler has been immortalized in literature and pop culture. While Bram Stoker's novel Dracula was loosely based on his life, many films and TV shows have featured a character based on Vlad the Impaler, mainly all vampire movies and TV shows, but he also features in the Da Vinci's Demons, the TV show, so shit like that. However, it is important to remember that the true story of Vlad's life is far more brutal and disturbing than any fictional account, and we'll get to some of those stories soon. While Vlad the Impaler was not in fact a vampire, believe it or not, his association with the fictional character of Dracula has led to him being popularly, how do you say that word?
Popularly.
It's like regularly. I can't say that either.
Regularly.
Popularly. Depicted as one. The image of a bloodthirsty ruler who preys on his subjects has been synonymous with the character of Dracula. And there was a popular legend that Vlad drank the blood of his enemies, leading many people mistakenly believe that Vlad was a vampire. However, there is little evidence to support the claim that Vlad actually drank blood. It is more likely that the legend was spread by his enemies as a way of demonizing him. Despite his reputation for brutality, Vlad the Impaler is still celebrated as a hero in some parts of Romania. He is seen as a defender of Wulakea against foreign invaders, and his strict moral code is admired by many. In fact, the Roman tourism industry has capitalized on his legacy, and there are many tours and attractions that are based around his life and exploits, which I totally get. Why wouldn't you? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Side note, he was also known for being very clean and well-groomed. He was said to have bathed frequently and to have taken great care with his appearance, even in the midst of battle. But despite being a clean freak, there is some historical evidence to support his use of impalement as a form of punishment. Many of these stories and legends about Vlad the Impaler are undoubtedly exaggerated or fabricated. However, chroniclers of the time describe his use of impalement in detail, and there are even surviving letters from Vlad himself that mention the practice. So, impalement was a method of execution that involved driving a sharp wooden stake through a person's body, not to kill them instantly, but to make them bleed and keep them alive for a while in agony, as the victims were also plucked at by birds and insects. It would generally take days, sometimes more than a week, for death to come to them. Could you imagine how stinky those areas would be of just that rotten human flesh and, yeah, gross.
And there was no TV in those days. So, if you were a horror fan, you would have been like walking past every day going, yeah.
And there was probably no sewage systems and shit like that to carry off the body fat.
They were used to really dirty smells back then.
Yes, yeah. Vlad was said to have used this method extensively, not only to execute his enemies, but also to instill fear in his subjects and deter potential rebels. It is said he used this method to kill tens of thousands of people during his reign, including political rivals, criminals, and prisoners of war. Imagine just having such a disregard for anyone else's life where you could just do this to not one, but tens of thousands, and not kill them, but like actually torture the fuck out of them for fucking days.
Children. They gave no fucks back then, especially the noble ones, like the ones who were born into fucking privilege. They were just like.
Could you imagine if he existed today and he'd have his coffee mug and be Vlad the Impaler, zero fucks given.
Don't fuck with me.
Don't fuck with me.
You know what will happen.
Yeah. Or just impale him as his slogan or something. One of the most well-known stories about Vlad the Impaler involves a group of Ottoman envoys who came to visit him. The Ottoman Empire was a powerful neighbour of Wallachia, and Vlad had a contentious relationship with them. When the envoys refused to remove their turbans, which was a sign of respect to Vlad to remove their turban, he had them impaled on the spot. It is also said that he then had their turbans nailed to their heads as a symbol of power.
Jesus, that's fucking dark, isn't it?
Ramsay Bolton, could you please come here? But back to the gore, please. Another gruesome story involves Vlad inviting his boyars.
Meow.
Go away, kitty. Or noblemen to a feast and then having them impaled while they were still seated at the table. He reportedly enjoyed watching them struggle and suffer and would often eat his dinner while they were dying in front of him. According to some accounts, he would even force his enemies to eat the flesh of their own comrades at these dinners. Hashtag red wedding realness.
Hashtag come get some.
Yeah. Vlad's use of empowerment was not limited just to his enemies, however. He was also known to use it as a form of punishment for crimes such as theft and lying. He also had a particular hatred for adulterous women. So fucking what's that bitch from Maths? Not Claire, the other one. She'd have been burnt.
It's like Duncan would have been right. You got some impaling coming your way.
And he would have them impaled through their genitals.
Wow.
Did your eyes just water a little bit?
Well, my genitals are inside my body, so.
Yeah, but this is women, so he means up the fanny.
Oh, yuck.
And they'd be alive with that in their fanny. He would often have the bodies of impaled criminals left on display for days as a warning to others. Handmaids. Despite his reputation for cruelty, Vlad was also a skilled politician and military strategist.
That's not surprising at all.
No. He was able to hold off the Ottoman Empire for a time, and his tactics of guerrilla warfare and surprise attacks were effective in defeating his enemies. He also worked to strengthen the economy and infrastructure of his kingdom, and was also known for his strict moral code, even punishing his own family members if they violated his rules. So kids would also pay for the sins of the father and shit like that. He was also seen as a defender of Wallachia against foreign invaders.
Sure.
Now, let's delve into some of the dark stories surrounding Vlad the Impaler, if we haven't done dark enough. His hatred of the Ottoman Turks is well known, and he is said to have impaled thousands of Ottoman soldiers during his reign. In 1462, Sultan Mehmed II sent an army of around 150,000 soldiers to invade Wallachia. Vlad and his army of around 30,000 soldiers managed to defeat the Ottomans, and he is said to have impaled between 20 to 30,000 Ottoman soldiers as a warning to other would-be invaders. This event is known as the Night Attack, and it cemented Vlad's reputation as a cruel and ruthless leader. In addition to his hatred of the Ottomans, Vlad also had a long-standing feud with the Saxon merchants who had settled in Transylvania. Saxons, they're the Viking area, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In 1456, Vlad invited a group of Saxon merchants to a banquet in his castle, where he accused them of cheating him in a trade deal. He then had them all impaled, along with their horses and their wagons, and stole their goods. This event is known as the Brasov Massacre, and it further solidified Vlad's reputation as a cruel and unpredictable leader slash ruler. It is said that he would sometimes impale entire villages or towns to send a message to potential rebels. His hatred of the Ottoman Turks and the Saxons led to numerous atrocities, and his reputation as a bloodthirsty ruler has endured for centuries. Another tale tells him this one. Like, I want to say you're going to love this one, but you know what I mean. Another tale tells him of rounding up all the poor and the beggars in the country and providing food for them in a large wooden building, which he then set on fire. He then explained to the boyars, which are the noblemen, that the poverty problem has now been solved. There are currently only rich people in the country.
Do you know what that reminds me of? Do you know that New York mayor, remember when he tried to get rid of all the homeless people?
Is that Rudy Giuliani?
What did he do to try to get rid of them? I can't remember.
I'm not sure.
He put them in a house, burn them or anything, you know.
Giuliani getting rid of homeless.
Because there was something happening that he didn't want them on the streets or anything to just like
make. So it says, Giuliani deployed the New York Police Department to arrest anyone who refused shelter, saying unhoused people didn't have a right to sleep on the sidewalk. So he just had police arrest him. He didn't solve the housing problem, but it's the same deal. Hey, look,
Vlad was his spirit animal.
Yeah, that no one's on the streets. That is.
We shouldn't laugh. That's actually really horrible, and it's in modern times. So it's
true. Awful. We take it back. Sorry, dear listeners.
Yes.
We are sensitive souls. One more story is about a Turkish prisoner who was brought before him. The prisoner was a skilled craftsman, and Vlad promised to spare his life if he could make a golden cup that would never break. Ooh. The craftsman succeeded, but when Vlad saw that the cup had a tiny flaw in it, he had the craftsman impaled on the spot. They say he had so many people impaled that the forest around the city of Turgovisti was continually filled with the cries of the dying. How fucking horrendous would that be, just sort of laying in bed and just hearing it continually?
Jesus Christ.
I know. So as you could imagine, his legacy continues to be debated and contested today. His use of impalement as a form of punishment is legendary, and his cruelty towards his enemies is well known. While some people see him as a hero who defended Wallachia against foreign invaders, Wallachia. That probably sounds a lot better, actually.
You say wool. There's no O's in the beginning.
Whoa. W-O is how they say you pronounce it. Wallachia. Against foreign invaders, others view him as a ruthless tyrant who inflicted unspeakable suffering on his subjects. His brutal methods of governance have earned him a place in history as one of the most bloodthirsty rulers of all time. However, the true story of his life is apparently much more complex and controversial than any fictional account. The impact of Vlad's cruelty can still be felt in Romania today. Being a brutal ruler and his association with the fictional character of Dracula makes him one of the most famous figures in history. You'll be pleased to know that the practice of impalement has left a lasting mark on the country's collective psyche, and it is often used as a symbol of brutality of the past. This is what you'll be pleased to know. The use of impalement as a form of punishment was banned in Romania in the late 19th century. So the late 1800s, partly as a response to Vlad's legacy. So 400 years later, maybe we should stop that. The debate over his legacy is likely to continue for many years to come. As horrendous as his life choices are, it is one that has inspired countless tales and legends. He is a fascinating yet somewhat disturbing figure in history. It is unclear how Vlad died, but it is believed that he was killed in battle against the Ottomans in 1476. Some accounts suggest that he was beheaded and his head was sent to the Ottoman Sultan as a trophy, while others suggest that he was buried in a monastery in Snagov, Romania.
Mm.
Good night, Vlad. So 1431 to 1476. What's that? So he reportedly died at my current age, 45.
Okay.
What a lot of fucking horror and torment he's caused in his short lifespan. Yeah.
But it's like anything, like, you know, it's based on retellings and
yes.
rumors, and there's certain historic, like the fact that you can quote the letters, though, that he described the way of impaling people, I guess, lends a level of, you know, genuineness.
To the stories.
To the story, yeah.
And the brutality of it all, yeah.
But, you know, talking about Dracula and how it was, you know, there's thoughts that it might have been loosely based on him. I've been to Whitby, you know, Whitby, like in England, where you go there and it's all the town, like, dedicated to Dracula because that's where...
I've never heard of
Yeah, so that's where one of the characters fled in Dracula, in, like, the Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Where
to,
is it?
To Whitby in England. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been there.
But where in England, sorry?
I think it's north. It's on the water. I know that much. And I went there from Hartlepool. So I remember it was a drive. Like, we didn't have to fly or anything like that. I went there years and years and years ago. When I took leave that time, when we all went.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I have, like the magnets and the cups. Like, I have a cup that's, like, Dracula. I've been to Whitby.
Cool.
And there's, like Bram Stoker's Dracula on the front.
It's right near Robin Hood's Bay.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, yeah, there's Hartlepool. So you went from Hartlepool, yeah.
It's
a
gorgeous place. Like, it's absolutely stunning. And we climbed up this massive cliff to go to the place where, you know, it's supposed allegedly to be part of. But it's all unfounded, I believe. Like,
of course.
This is just from what I remember. I don't know how accurate that is. But they totally, like, buy into the whole, you know, Dracula lives here. Dracula.
Well, wouldn't you cash in on it? Yeah, get the touristy town going.
But,
very cool. Yeah, just an hour south of Hartlepool.
Yes, yes, it is. Indeed.
All right, why don't you bestow upon us your Hungarian tales of murder?
Well, once again, I want to reiterate the fact that we did not collaborate in any way.
No, just we had to pick a murderous royal.
Because you got to hear some themes.
I love that.
Okay. So Elizabeth Bathory, a.k.a. Countess Dracula, or the Blood Countess, was a wealthy Hungarian countess who lived from 1560 to 1640 and was accused of torturing and killing hundreds of young women. The countess was raised in a noble Protestant family that ruled throughout, are you ready for this, Transylvania.
Oh, wow.
And knew a life of significant privilege from birth. Some say that she would later use that power to commit heinous acts.
Well, I think some would be right.
The evidence in history is sketchy at best, but if it is true, she would have history's most prolific female. She would have been history's most prolific female serial killer. Despite the lack of evidential records, the Guinness Book of Records cites her as the worst female murderer and torturer of all time.
Wow.
With her victims, alleged virgins, like all of them, totaling more than 600 young girls and women.
Jesus. I don't even think I've heard of this bitch.
If you look her up in the Guinness Book of Records, there's like an excerpt and it says victims 600 plus.
Jesus.
But we'll go through all that stuff. In the early 17th century, rumours began to circulate around the village of Trechen in present-day Slovakia. Peasant girls looking for servant work in the... it's spelled C-S-E-T-J-E castle. but I actually wrote it down. I tried to get the pronunciation, but I must have deleted that bit. Hang on.
That sounds a bit hard, that one.
it's Shatye, really. Shatye is really the pronunciation. Something like that anyway. But I'm going to, for the rest of this segment, I'm going to refer to it as the castle.
Fair enough.
Because, you know, it's easier. So peasant girls looking for servant work in the castle were disappearing, and no one knew why. But before long, many locals began to point their fingers at Countess Elizabeth Bathory. She was a descendant of a powerful Hungarian family and the product of inbreeding between Baron George Bathory and Baroness Anne Bathory. And she went on to live in the castle. Oh, here we go. Pronounce Chater or Chete, maybe. I actually listened to a recording of it.
All right.
To try to get the pronunciation. I was like, I'm never gonna remember this the whole way through, so I'm just gonna call it the castle. So Chete Castle, a wedding gift she had received from her husband, the famed Hungarian war hero Frederick Nassaday. By 1578, Frederick had become the chief commander of the Hungarian army and embarked on a military campaign against the Ottoman Empire.
Oh, wow.
Leaving his wife in charge of his vast estates and the governing of the local populace. At first, all appeared to have been well under Bathory's leadership. But as time went on, rumours that she tortured her servants began to spread. And when her husband died in 1604, these views became much more widespread and dramatic. She would soon be accused of not only torturing but killing hundreds of girls and women who entered her castle. Today, Elizabeth Bathory is infamously remembered as the Blood Countess, who killed up to 650 girls and women in the Kingdom of Hungary. If the stories about her are true, then she is most likely the most prolific and vicious female serial killer of all time. But not everyone is convinced of her guilt.
Oh.
Similar themes to Vlad, am I right?
Interesting.
According to witnesses, her crimes took place between 1590 and 1610, with most of the vicious murders happening after her husband's death in 1604. Her first targets were said to have been poor girls and young women who were lured to the castle with the promise of servant work. But as the story...
Sounds like, you know, hostel, come here, we do this, and then next minute, cut your Achilles tendons.
But as the story goes, she didn't stop here. She allegedly expanded her sights and began killing daughters of the gentry who had been sent to the castle for their education. Mm. She also supposedly kidnapped local girls in the area who would have never come to the castle of their own free will. As a wealthy noblewoman, Bathory evaded the law until 1610. By that point, she had reportedly killed multiple victims of noble birth, which concerned the authorities far more than the death of servants. Surprise! So Hungarian King Matthias II sent his highest-ranking representative, Gyorsi Ferenc, to investigate the complaints against her. Again, for the purposes of this segment, Georgie will forever be referred to as Georgie, please.
Georgie.
Georgie collected evidence from some 300 witnesses who levelled a bevy of truly horrifying charges against the Countess. According to the contemporary reports and the stories told long after, Elizabeth Bathory tortured girls and young women in unspeakable ways.
God, did we get into that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I can't wait.
She allegedly burned her victims with hot irons, beat them to death with clubs, stuck needles under their fingernails, poured ice water over their bodies and left them to freeze to death outside in the cold.
Jesus.
Covered them in honey so that bugs could feast on their exposed skin, sewed their lips together, and bit off chunks of flesh from their breasts and faces.
Jesus. So she's an actual animal.
Yeah. So witnesses claimed that her favourite method of torture was using scissors to mutilate her victims' bodies and faces. She supposedly used the instrument to cut off their hands, noses and genitals. She sometimes even used scissors to slice open the skin between her victims' fingers. These horrific acts of violence and sometimes supernatural legends that surround the crimes help define Elizabeth Bathory's terrifying legacy today.
Jesus
At the
Christ.
Time of Georgia Plus investigation, some accused her of being a vampire, while others... Oh. I know, here we go, done that old route. while others claim to have seen her have sex with the devil.
Oh, well, that sounds
legit.
They saw it
with their own eyes. The most infamous accusation, the one that inspired her nickname, the Blood Countess, claimed that Elizabeth Bathory bathed in the blood of her young victims in an attempt to maintain her youthful appearance.
Do you know who she's reminding me of? I don't know if you've seen this one. Oh, you've seen Coven. American Horror Story. Mm-hmm. She reminds me of Kathy Bates' character.
Yes, with all the slaves, and
she used the blood to paste on her skin to, yeah.
Oh, that's a horrific season as well of fucking American Horror Story.
AHS.
But although this story is by far the most memorable, it's also extremely unlikely to have been true. So according to sources, this claim didn't even appear in print until after she'd been dead for more than a century. Considering the mythologized elements of Bathory's alleged crimes, it begs the question of how much of her bloody story was actually true and how much of it was made up to just take down a powerful and wealthy woman. So if you think about it, she was already incredibly wealthy, asset-wise, in her own right. Then she married this dude who brought all these other assets and wealth into the situation. So for a woman to have that much power in those times was insane, right? Like, yeah. It was just, you know, just based on the fact that her parents died and she just kept getting left stuff over and over and over and over. According to Georgie's letter to his wife, his unannounced visit to the castle. So remember, he was employed by the Hungarian king to go and check it out. When
just
he
arrived, a routine,
yeah, just check
inspection,
it out.
Just
check out what
squeeze.
I'm hearing. You know, don't worry. Like, I'm not concerned as the king that she's got all these assets more than me.
They just pull out the iPad and take a picture of the corner of the.
How much does she really own? How much money does she have? Can you just go check it out?
Can you please clean the aircon filter next time?
So, according to a letter that he sent to his wife Georgia Plus, he arrived unannounced at the castle and he found one dead girl and another living prey girl in the castle.
Prey,
but there is no.
Oh, right. Prey is in P-R-E-Y.
Yes. So some girl running around in, you know, disarray.
Yeah.
Partially tortured but still alive, and they were hunting her to a degree, I guess. That's my interpretation.
Yeah.
But there is no evidence that the girl found alive was ever interviewed, treated by any type of medical professional, physician, blah, 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 or gave a witness statement. So she was alive allegedly when they found her, according to the letter that he wrote to his wife, but why was there no evidence presented at trial?
Mm-hmm.
So it is believed through retellings and rumours long after her death that Bathory was caught in the act of torture. But the real recollection of what actually happened was she was having dinner. Initially, Georgie rocked up unannounced and was like, you know, made a declaration to people she was having dinner with and villagers that he, I guess, passed on his way up there or way back, that he had caught her red-handed. However, she was arrested and detained prior to the discovery or presentation of any of the victims. It seems most likely that the claim of Georgie's discovery that he found Bathory covered in blood has been the embellishment of fictionalized accounts in the years after her death.
Afterwards,
and,
yeah.
Continuing on, you know, like, you know, urban legends type thing.
Yeah.
Georgie debated further proceedings with Bathory's son, Paul, and two of her son-in-law. So she had three or four kids. Her family, which ruled Transylvania. So I'm going to stop one thing and just relate this something back to my own personal life.
Oh, okay. Yes, Countess.
when we got stuck, I don't know if you remember when we were traveling Europe and we got stuck because our flights all got cancelled because we were with a budget airline, and we ended up stranded in Italy and we were supposed to get to Amsterdam because we had to get back to Newcastle on the ferry to come for the flights to Magaluf.
Right.
So we were frantically, because all our flights got cancelled, in the middle of Italy trying to find flights to get us somewhere. And we ended up flying with Transylvania Airlines.
They have their own airline.
Yes. And I remember sitting in Italy in the airport trying to figure out what was the cheapest flight that we could get onto. And I'm Googling Transylvania Airlines and how many times they crash, and, you know, like anything that I could get, yes. Because I was, and I had Link with me, and I had, you know, my ex-husband with me, and I was sat there going, it's Transylvania Airlines, man.
It doesn't sound comforting.
It sounds super dodge.
You're going to land in the middle of fucking some vampire district and they're all going to eat you.
But we had a perfect flight. There was no vampires that I could tell. But
what,
you know,
was the food? Cup of blood, ma'am? Raw steak.
Yum, 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 yum.
Good girl, drink up.
But yeah, just a little bit of trivia there for you. But the flight was perfect. Anyway, so Georgie debated further proceedings with Bathory's son Paul and two of her son-in-laws. Her family, which ruled Transylvania, sought to avoid the loss of Bathory's property, which was at risk of being seized by the crown, by the king,
yep.
Who was sent there. Following a public scandal because of everything that had happened. So Georgie, along with Paul and her two son-in-laws, originally
pretty
modern
planned... names, really, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. The son-in-laws, I've changed it to son-in-laws because neither of the names I could pronounce, but for some reason there was Paul and the son-in-laws had different names. So I was like, I'm never going to be able to say that right. So Paul and her two son-in-laws originally planned for Bathory to be sent to a nunnery. But as accounts of her actions spread, they decided to keep her under strict house arrest. So basically what happened is they all came
You know they
together.
Weren't ankle bracelets around in that time yeah. too either. Yeah, strict house strict.
But it's funny that he was having conversations because with her family members because they were all like, we can't let this wealth go. What do we have to do?
Yeah.
You tell us what we have to do to her, no matter whether she's innocent or guilty, so that our family can retain all our property.
Yes.
So there was a little bit of a handshake agreement where they're like, you know, we'll do whatever you want to her and we'll support it, but leave everything in our name.
We want the money.
Yeah, and we want the castles. Plus.
Yeah.
So most of the witnesses testified that they had heard the accusations from others, but they did not see it themselves. The servants of the castle confessed under torture, which is not a credible source, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. You know. You've got 24-hour interrogations or you've got torture. Both get the same result.
Later they were executed anyway, even though they were the king's witnesses because they testified against her and said all these horrible things after they were tortured. They were still executed anyway because I guess
they didn't want it coming out.
Yeah, well, that was the real reason. But it's like, oh, they associated with her, so therefore they're also guilty and they never told anyone, but let's just kill them after we've tortured them to get a confession out of them to help our case.
Just so we could say they told us this. We did not torture them at all. It was all willing.
But they were also involved, so therefore they're dead.
Yeah.
So two of the servants that were arrested, so there was a whole bunch of people that they said, so the servants were all tortured, but there was a whole bunch of other people that they said were her accomplices. So two of the accomplices were arrested. This is how they were tortured. So the accomplices, two women, had their fingers torn out with a pair of red hot pincers, and after that, they were burned alive.
Jesus Christ.
So another supposed accomplice.
Sorry, can I just say, and you know that these accomplices were made to do what they had to do as well. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. If they had to go get women, it was that, or they were going to be the ones that were fucking covered in honey.
And so one of those women who was tortured had her fingers torn out with hot, you know, pincers and then burned alive. She was a wet nurse who had, you know, like fed hundreds of children over the course of her career and the goodness of her heart, like kept her boobs full so she could, you know, keep children from dying and stuff like that. So she was a really good Samaritan, but yet she was brutally, you
know. Pincers ripped out her fingers. Jesus Christ.
So another younger accomplice, after the belief that because he was quite young, he was less culpable, they executed him much less painfully. They just took his head off, but then they burned him with the same, in the same spot that they'd burned the previous women. Another accomplice had escaped, but then was captured and burned alive. And then there was another woman, another servant, who received a life sentence after testimony showed that she'd been abused by the other women who were accomplices.
Oh, of course. They were the ones that made her do it.
There remains no evidence of this abuse.
Yeah. Because it's baloney. Yeah.
So Georgie charged Bathory with the death of 80 girls. That said, one witness claimed to have seen a book kept by Elizabeth herself where she recorded the names of all her victims, 650 in total. This diary, however, appears to have only ever been a legend. It was never produced in any records of the trial. There's no evidence that it ever existed.
Yeah.
But this is how, you know, they charged her with 80 based on 300 witness testimonies, but there was a book of 650 deaths.
Allegedly. And that would be like a trophy thing for her, the book of names.
So Bathory was herself spared from execution due to her status as a noble. She was...
Sounds reasonable.
Totes. After all the brutalness that happened to all the people who worked with her.
That bullied her into killing all these ladies.
She was bricked up and isolated in a room at the castle where she remained under house arrest for 4 years until her death in 1614. She was about 54 when she died.
They didn't live long back in those days, did they? Thank God we do now.
Well, she would have been in I imagine as a Rapunzel sort of tower something where they just gave her bread and water and were like, you know, bitch, please. Apparently also she said one day, there's rumors that she, while she was under house arrest, she could completely go about the castle herself.
Yeah.
And apparently she said to someone one day, I'm not feeling very well. I feel dizzy and I've got some pains in my chest. And they said, you'll be fine, go to sleep. And then she woke up dead.
She woke up dead, bless her.
Yeah, but she was 54 and again in those days. But Bathory's case may not have been as cut and dry as it seemed. In fact, some modern Hungarian scholars say that it may have been motivated more by others' power and greed than her supposed evil. It turned out that King Matthias II owed Bathory's late husband and then her a sizable debt. Matthias was not inclined to pay that debt, which historians say may have fueled his move to incriminate the Countess in multiple crimes and deny her the opportunity to defend herself in court. So once she was a criminal, that debt disappears, right? Because she has no claim to it.
Yeah.
Because she's lucky to be able to, you know, keep her assets or give them to her children. Because once you're convicted, you're like, fucking, everything's taken. Likewise, some historians say that witnesses probably provided the incriminating yet contradictory testimonies under duress and that the king called for the death penalty before Bathory's family could intervene on her behalf. This too may have been politically motivated as the death penalty meant that the king could seize her land.
Well, of course.
So it sounds like the son and the brother, the son-in-laws came in to try to negotiate.
Yeah.
To keep the land because once they executed her,
it became
maybe his debt was so great that he was like, do you know what? You keep your fucking property and wealth. Just absolve me of my debt.
Yeah.
I've lost where I am. Hang on. The best case scenario is that Bathory abused her servants, but came nowhere near the level of violence alleged at her trial. Worst case, she was a blood-sucking demon sent from hell to murder young women.
I'm going to go with worst case. But Transylvania didn't seem like a... even the name Transylvania has such... And I don't know if that's just through...
Absolutely,
pop culture,
yeah.
But it's just got like a real, ooh. Yeah.
That's what I was saying before. You can imagine when the only cheap flight I could get was through Transylvanian Airlines. I was sat there sort of rocking in the corner in the middle of at the airport with complete desperation because all the other flights were like 200 euro to get somewhere. And I was like, we got to go on this plane.
Are we going to fly on the back of bats? What's happening?
And I actually remember saying to Jamie at one point who was completely like, did not care.
Blase.
Like if I didn't have Link with me, I would be fine. But I've got like an 8-year old child with me.
Mummy, why are we going down rapidly?
Why do these people have we your teeth. Yeah.
That countess is giving me funny looks.
So, yeah, that's the story of Elizabeth, Countess Elizabeth Bathory. You know, think of what you will of her, but was she just completely hung out to dry? Was she just a bit of a bitch? Or was she, you know, completely horrible? And actually, what the Guinness Book of Records claim is that she's the worst female serial killer and torturer in, like, history ever.
Now, I'm going to say something slightly probably controversial. I know one of our YouTube watchers will probably hate me for this, but, like, you know, when you hear about the worst female serial killer, and especially back in a time like that, you're like, oh, good girl, girl power. It wasn't just the men. I don't appreciate what she did, but it's just like, oh, girls making names for themselves. Love that for you.
I never think that. I love that we're in a minority, like, you know, we're like this small little group that only kill out mostly out of emotion or poison from abuse and, yeah, or, you know, stuff like that. I love that we're in a minority. I want to keep it that way. Let's keep it that way, guys. Come on, girls. Girl power.
Stay sane and don't kill.
Be good.
Yeah. Go girls and gays.
The gays would be even in a more minority, like, in general, but also, yeah, in terms of murdering, I'm sure they're like a blip on the radar.
But they're the most dastardly ones when it happens.
Yeah. But yet accused of it so many times.
Yeah. Oh, very good. That was interesting. I hadn't heard of Elizabeth Bathory at all, please.
How funny that she was like 100 years later almost from Vlad.
And did some fucking really terrible things.
Allegedly,
you're right.
But obviously there must be some level of, like, relationship there, because if he was, you know, he was running Hungary as well 100 years before. So
we've done a little research because of the similarities between our two stories tonight. And I've just
that we
Googled.
Had not planned, guys. We had not plans. We had no
Did
ideas.
Not know
but
about
there's
the similarities.
So many common themes.
Yes. So the answer and explanation. While Vlad was at time allied with Stephen Bathory, Voivode of Transylvania, so the prince, mm-hmm, in his final effort to retake
the
command.
Count, he would have been the count because she was a countess.
In his final effort to I think Voivode was prince in the thingy.
Excuse moi.
Well, it might be her uncle or something. In his final effort to retake the command of Wallachia, there are no family ties between the Bathorys of either the Exed or Somalio branches with the Dracula testi of their parent Basarab line.
Excellent.
So make
summary.
Make of that what you will. But yeah, there you go.
There you fucking go. But also, okay, please don't hate on us when we don't retell our history very well.
Yeah, look. We do not claim to be experts. We claim to be expert drinkers.
We claim to be entertainers, if you will.
If you will. So while we appreciate that there are people out there that know this shit a lot better than we do, chill out and have a fucking barbecue.
Yeah, just be nice. Well, thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed our murderous tales of blue blood.
Tune in next week as we get into What's the Haps? And discuss recent topics that piqued our interest, please. Don't be shy to share your joy of our podcast with your friends. They'll totes love you for it. And remember, if you are whining, you are winning. And just for the people at home, it's not whining with a H. It's whining as in drinking wine.
Drinking wine, please.
And we're whining.
Cheers.
So we're winning. Chin chin. Good night, you stupid bitches.
Good night.
Good night.
Yeah, that stupid bitch. He's a stupid bitch. What a stupid bitch. That stupid bitch.